Welcome to the Lending Forward podcast, brought to you by Atlantic Bay Mortgage Group. This is your home for real discussions about the mortgage and housing industry. Our hosts are here bringing you firsthand accounts every week from people at the heart of the business. And we're chatting with professionals from all corners of the industry as they help cultivate transparency around the future of the industry we love. Together, we are lending forward all we know to you. Thanks for joining us for today's episode. Let's dive in. Well, hey, everybody, this is Eliza Delgado, and I am joining you with our Lending Forward podcast in another fantastic episode. I am joined today by the one and only Dave Phillips from the Raleigh Regional Association of Realtors here in Raleigh, North Carolina. So thank you for joining me today, Dave, and I'm so glad you're here. I want to hear more about you, and I want our listeners to learn a little bit about what you're doing here at RRER.
Oh, well, that's could be a boring podcast, but I always I'm reaching the end of my career. I say I'm not in the real estate business. I'm in the realtor business. So I've never sold real estate, never had a license. What I do is association management. And I've spent the last 34 years in the realtor business, managing realtor associations and helping realtors be successful. So that's the kind of, you know, the overall thing. And I got into this business because I wanted to get into association management. And it just happened that there was a job opening at the State Association in Virginia. And I was in the hotel business, but I was working with a lot of associations. They were my clients. And that looks really great. I think association management might be, you know, where I belong. And I fell into the realtor organization, and there's a saying in the realtor organization that you never retire. It's like a high school where you never graduate.
hanging on to that dream.
Yeah, you just keep hanging out with different people here and there, but you're still in high school. So it's been awesome, and it's going to be tough to let go of all the friendships I've made over the years when I retire.
One thing I always say, especially on this podcast, but just by virtue of the industries that both of us are in, we're in the people business, and the relationships don't really go anywhere. They just change. So one thing I thought was interesting, and I didn't realize specifically that you have not in particular been in the production role. So what is that like? And is that really common amongst association leadership? And is that atypical, or is that pretty common, do you think?
It's pretty common. There's some realtors who go into association management, but and most of us, most people just fall into the association business. They get hired as the communications director or the government affairs director, and they go, oh, I just want to do government affairs. There's a whole different world here that they're exposed to. And they understand because it's a very interesting business. Changes every day.
That's right.
You have to be a little ADD to do this job because you know,
wearing all hats all the time.
Yeah, if you want standard stuff, it just changes so much. You just can't count on anything being the same day to day. So it's really good. But I never had a license, and I have done a lot of real estate transactions over time. I think I'm on house number 8 purchased, so I've had that experience, but I've never sold real estate. And my standard answer, because I do get asked that a lot, is that I didn't want to work that hard.
Different type of hard.
they work very hard. Lots of hours and weekends and stuff like that. And I think they make it look easy, and that's what attracts a lot of people to the business. Yeah, it looks an easy, fun. We just show people houses, and you got all the HGTV stuff. But the truth of the matter is, they work their butts off, and I appreciate them for it. And of course, always done my deals. I've always involved realtors, and it's been great.
So talk to me a little bit about, obviously, you've been around for a very long time in terms of, you know, different markets even, but specifically from a leadership position. And I think given that, you know, really horizon level view of what's happening in area associations and in different markets, I would love to pick your brain a little bit on
kind of what you see in terms of a commonality for people who really tend to become top producers or have an outsized ability to really kind of make that shift and really leverage the market and make a name for themselves. Is there a common thread? Obviously, hard worker, accessibility, and those kinds of things. But is there something that you've seen? And then also, this is a really long question, but then also I'm curious about, have you seen those personality traits shift over time with the integration of technology and things like that as well? I'm curious about what you've seen.
Yeah, very big question.
It's loaded,
yeah.
I know.
It's fairly easy answer, actually, because it's not unlike any other business. You just are in charge of yourself is the big difference. It's up to you if you're going to be successful instead of up to the company you work for or something like that. And the brokers do help a lot. That's not what I'm saying. What I mean is, as an individual, you can choose to be really successful and do all the hard work and stuff that takes, or you can choose to do it part-time. And, different strokes for different folks. But
self-determination.
Yep. And what really sets off in my mind the folks that I've been super impressed with is they see it as a business and not just a job. They see it as a true profession, and they're focused on their goals. They set goals. They try to achieve those goals. They invest in themselves by training and that sort of thing. And typically they're people that like to build relationships, but you know, there's more than one way to do it. And there's such a vast opportunity where you could just do investing and be very successful at buying investment properties for yourself or a team you're on, and not really build all the relationships that you might do if you were just a more typical, if you will, or stereotypical listing agent that listed resales and so, but you can also work with new construction, is another good avenue in the business that doesn't, you don't necessarily have to do it the same way that a stereotypical listing agent type thing. So there's just so many ways to be successful in this business. And the ones that are successful are focused, and they don't try and do it all. They don't try to, list 48 properties and work with buyer agents on a regular basis as well.
Pick a lane.
they picked a lane and they own that niche. And one of my favorites, Gretchen up in Pennsylvania, is a great example. I think top producer. She liked to play golf and smoke cigars.
Nice.
So she, joined a club for cigar smoking, and that was her niche market. I mean, those people got to know her, and she was a rare thing. She was not a normal, if a guy had done that, it'd been normal.
It was different.
Yeah. So she went outside of what would typically be a female type thing with the cigar smoking, at least. The golf's, plenty female, of course, on that, but. Yes. She just, she went outside that and made that her niche, and has been very successful. So find that niche is the common thing I've seen, where they own something, or when they say that I want to be the mayor of this particular neighborhood or whatever, that type of thing that, when you have that kind of focus, it, all the other distractions around you seem to fall away, and you can really be successful.
Yeah. One thing that I've loved about, connecting with realtors of all shapes and sizes is, and especially about the industry itself, is it gives you total freedom to decide what works with you at any given time in your personal life and in your career, and the flexibility to kind of chase after whichever model is the best. So from an individual contributor to a team approach to, whatever that looks like. So I'm fascinated by the ways that this industry facilitates someone's, way of life, and the flexibility it gives somebody to go after it and make it happen. Mm-hmm. Obviously something that impacts that, and I know we have other things that we want to talk about, but it was top of mind for me because you just hosted a broker in charge forum this morning about it. Seasonality is important, and obviously a topic that everybody's navigating is a little bit of the NAR, that's happening. And, we're now in a period of time where people are realizing the implications of what some of the changes mean. And certainly in North Carolina, it's a little bit different because we're a little bit more protected. But generally speaking, from a leadership standpoint, have you, how have you been navigating this from a leadership role at the association level? And what does that look like? I'd love to have you share a little bit about how you facilitated that broker in charge forum this morning as well.
Yeah, sure. I think there's so much unknown with the settlement, and and we won't, it'll be years and many court cases before we completely figure it out, unfortunately.
Yeah,
that's just the way this type of thing is going to have to work out, because nobody's going to give us the answers. And so that type of environment is very stressful for people. And that's why the exact opposite of the top producers, where they're very focused and they have their plan and they execute their plan. We don't have a plan here. We don't have any, we don't have anything. We don't know what's going to happen. We don't know, you know, people ask you questions and we're like, I think so, but you know, they could change their mind tomorrow. And you know, there could be a court case that completely wipes it. And so we have to, our leadership role as an association is to bring a little calm to the storm, to offer that reassurance that, that things are going to be okay. We're going to figure this out. And like I tell a lot of them, this is nothing compared to what we've been through in my career. I was in the business right before we even had agency laws. We didn't have buyer agents at all. And here we are worrying about how to protect buyer agencies. So back then, we were like worried about how to keep them out of the business. Because
you really were in the Wild West frontier.
Exactly. So, you know, and then, you know, that little fad called the internet came along. And, you know, that was going to devastate us. And everybody was scared and everything. And it did take down some industries. But I always remember a magazine front page of, it was like Newsweek or something like that, one of the big magazines. And it was a couple years into the internet, and the magazine said, Realtors won Internet Zero, you know, like a scoreboard, and you know, indicating the realtors had won and beat the internet, for goodness sakes. And if we can do that, this is nothing, you know, this is really nothing. And so to bring that kind of calm and perspective on it, I think it's what leadership it looks like for us right now. And if we're out there pushing the panic button and screaming and everything, to be calm, share as much information as you possibly can, and people will figure it out. And we just need to give them that confidence and comfort that they will.
You know, I really love that, you know, kind of focusing on the calm and being kind of the anchor in the storm. And also being the conduit of information of, hey, here's what it really means. Here's what it looks like for you. Here's what your brokerage in charge are armed with. And, you know, just conveying that confidence that comes with knowledge and making sure that they know that they're secure if they just maintain that knowledge standard, and giving them all those resources. One thing that I wanted to ask you, having been here at RRAR for as long as you have been, is specifically about, you know, this market and what you've seen in your tenure here as the CEO of the association. What have you seen? Like, what's your biggest accomplishment that you're proud of, both for yourself professionally, but then also as an association over your tenure here?
Sure. Wow. Great question.
I know I'm asking you loaded questions today.
I think the thing we can be most proud of over the last, I've been here 3.5 years, basically, or close to it. And the thing that we can be most proud of is that we have built for the future, for long-term success, not a short-term, you know, fix to anything. We've built an amazing staff, and we've become a more strategic focused organization, where we have a very active strategic plan that points us in the right direction. And we're kind of in an inflection point right now, of course, with that, because we have a new CEO coming in later this year, and we have a new strategic plan that we're going to do in November. So between those two, that's a huge inflection point that'll take us in a new direction, potentially, which is great. New directions are always fun, but the main thing is it'll take us in a strategic direction, a direction we intended to go, not just wandering through, winging it as we go along. We'll have multi-years of planning, you know, to guide us. And when you do that, you build certainty with the members and with the staff. They know where they're going, so they want to be engaged in it. They can see it and they can decide or not. They could say, I don't want to do that. I don't agree with it or whatever, but they at least know where we're standing and not just blowing with it, whatever breeze blows through the real estate, network. And if we can stay focused like that, like we have become in the last couple of years, I think we'll be very successful in the future. And it's exciting to do that. But we've shored up our finances. We've become strategic. We've built a great staff. We've got all the tools right now to really take another step up. And by that, I mean, we've grown enormously in the last 10 years, doubled in size, basically, in the last 10 years. And, part of us, we don't really realize we're as big as we are now. We've become a major player in the real estate association world, and yet we're still doing things that maybe aren't quite up to that level. And I think we've made some advances there, and I think we've got a great opportunity to make some more advances and do some big things that we couldn't have thought of in the past. But now that we've got a solid foundation, I think we're poised for a new CEO to come in here and take us to new heights.
So from an association standpoint, and I know, we've talked about Raleigh quite a bit on the podcast just because it is an up and coming, or it's here in terms of metropolitan markets and the type of growth it's been experiencing for the last handful of years. When you talk about the number of realtors that are part of the association, what does that actually look like in terms of headcount? Because I don't think people quite realize how big associations actually are when they're regional like Raleigh.
Yeah. So we represent Wake and Harnett counties. We've got roughly 10,000 members, a little over 10,000 members that are currently members of the association. We also own the MLS, Triangle MLS. And they have, I think it's either 15 or 16,000 members to them. And it includes the entire Triangle area, Johnson County, all the way out to Alamance. So we're becoming larger regionally because the real estate market has expanded due to the housing shortage. People have to go everywhere. It used to be you could just sell in Cary and you'd be fine. You have plenty to sell. That doesn't work. If you're not trying to sell homes in the 50-mile radius of Raleigh, you probably have too limited of a marketplace just because of inventory. That's where your clients are going to need to go to find a home these days. And we're building like crazy here, but we're growing like crazy too. So we're not catching up enough, and it's going to take years to alleviate the housing shortage that we currently have. And the community is going to have to really step up and embrace that growth, the construction and new neighborhoods and stuff like that, because if we don't, it's just going to cause housing to get even worse than it currently is in terms of affordability, and people like our policemen and our nurses and stuff won't be able to live anywhere near the community, and we'll suffer as an entire community those lines. And so that's by far the number one issue that the politicians are facing, that the realtor organization's facing, and we've got to continue to embrace construction, new construction, and building more, because that's the only way we're getting out of this this shortage that we currently have.
Yeah. Not intending to go in a very technical route, but from a governance standpoint, obviously the association has some kind of influence on local politics in terms of policy decisions that impact, affordable housing, so to speak, or, even the different rules in terms of, different types of housing that can be built beyond affordable housing. So a little bit of the governance, how does that work when it comes to working with the city or municipality on being able to influence those decisions and giving them that feedback loop of what realtors are needing and what the housing demands are? What does that look like from your perspective?
Yeah. I tell you what, it's easier now, actually. It's always been an issue, but because the crisis has gotten so acute, it's not hard to get the politicians, attention when it comes to housing issues. So we're at a really golden opportunity to make an impact. And so we have a government affairs committee. We call it GPIC, Government Policy and Issues Committee. There you go. Everybody just calls it GPIC, and a lot of people forget the name. But anyway, it is our Government Affairs Committee, essentially, and it follows a lot of the localities and stuff that go on. We also have a Government Affairs Director who really focuses on building relationships with these different elected officials all over the region. We just finished interviewing a couple weeks ago now, 40 different politicians, or candidates running for office.
Yeah. And,
through that, we were able to start relationships, and our staff and members follow up on those relationships. We have what we call local political coordinators that we've been expanding that program in the last couple of years, where individuals who are in their neighborhood, their community, are assigned to be the liaison to the different local ruling bodies. So, for instance, I'm currently the LPC, as we call it, the local political coordinator in Wendell, where I live.
Yep.
And my job is to build relationships with the people on the town council there and make sure I'm a resource for them. They can, if they need housing stats, or if they need someone to serve on a committee, I can find a member to do that type of thing, as well as be there and speak in favor of policies that help us, because there's plenty of opposition to new construction projects that we need so desperately. And I get that, if you've lived in Wendell your whole life, it's probably a little unsettling, the amount of growth that's going on out there, but it's not going to stop the growth by any sort of political bill. It's the growth's coming. It's just a matter of whether or not we manage it well, and
that's exactly right,
or we just try to stick our head in the sand and get run over by it.
Yeah, I think it's always a delicate balance. But one of the ideas that I want to get across to, those who might be listening or even watching this on YouTube would be, most importantly, is if you are a realtor and you have an association that you can get involved in, these have direct impacts to your local community. And if we're in a community, it's our duty and our obligation to be part of that conversation, especially if we're going to be the experts in the things that we're helping home buyers and sellers with. So I love how far you guys go to making sure you're part of that conversation actively. Obviously, having been a part of our RAR, I can see that firsthand. And I think the other thing, getting back to when you mentioned the size of our RAR, I'm also constantly surprised at how accessible it is. And almost all the associations that I'm a part of, I get to see that firsthand. They're friendly. They're, varying levels of size, of course. But I think the accessibility is the biggest thing of being able to get in there, get involved, and be able to serve and be able to give back and also get information that you need from your sources pretty quickly. I think it's always impressive at how big an organization it truly is that can be that efficient. So that's kudos to good leadership. So great job. Okay, so I know we also can go down this path for a very long time, but knowing that you're getting ready to sail off into the sunset happily, smiling, I know I asked you earlier, but I do think it's important to talk about the things that you're most proud of, not just from an organizational standpoint, but just what you've accomplished throughout your career looking back. So do you have something that's top of mind that you're like, man, if I look back, like, I'm so proud of having accomplished this? What does that look like for you?
That's a question. So I think there's been a few points that I've been able to be part of, and I won't really list it as an accomplishment for me, but I think I was part of the accomplishment, and that was very gratifying. So when I was with the state of Virginia staff, I wasn't the CEO, I was just a staff member. I was assigned the role of working with a task force to draft the agency law that still today rules real estate agency relationships in Virginia.
Yeah. And,
it was like 18 months of meetings. I mean, most task forces only last like 3 months, maybe 2 months.
No such thing.
18 months. It was a big lift. And we went through all sorts of gyrations of what we thought it should be like. And there's literally no law. We were creating a brand new law. There was no law other than standard laws that governed agency relationships in real estate. And they were not very, very friendly. There was a lot of liability in the industry. And yeah. And it just hadn't come to fruition yet. The lawyers hadn't figured out yet, I guess. But when we drafted that and put it into place, and then I wrote all the training materials and stuff to train all the agents around the state, that was a huge learning experience, growth experience for me.
Oh, yeah.
It was just such an honor to be part of something that, you know, has had years and years of impact on the industry, and not just Virginia. Every state was doing it at the same time, and
yeah.
Everybody's agency laws are different. But to think that I was part of that kind of foundational law that is so important to real estate these days, it was an amazing experience. I picked that as number one, but the rest of it, the stuff that I'm super proud of as an organization that we've done are more along the community service end of things. We started a housing foundation when I was in Charlottesville. I was the CEO of the Charlottesville Association of Realtors. And that community, a little small university town type thing, housing costs were really high for very low salaries. So the affordability was a huge issue there. Beautiful, wonderful community, and had lots of really rich people and lots of people that were struggling to buy a house because you just didn't get paid that much as a nurse or a policeman or something like that. So we created the Workforce Housing Fund, and that was something totally from scratch we created, and it provided down payment assistance for policemen, firemen, nurses, and teachers.
Yeah.
We would love to help everybody, but we had to stay focused, like we were talking earlier. So we focused on that. We raised a couple $100,000. We partnered with a housing organization called the Piedmont Housing Alliance there, screened the candidates and made sure they were the right candidates, pulled in money from other places.
Yeah.
And we were able to impact some people's lives that wouldn't have been able to get into a house because the down payment is often the hardest part. So we set that up so that it had life to it. So and when the person sold that house, the equity, not all the equity, but what we had lent them came back with a small amount of interest. So it would regenerate over time. And that was an amazing foundation. And then here in Raleigh, the Realtor Giving Network, now, I don't know if you know, but it used to be called the Housing Foundation of Wake County or something like that, relatively boring name. And we rebranded it. And more importantly, Raleigh Realtors decided to get behind it. We decided that we needed to make sure the donations that were coming in were getting to the people that needed the help, not going to administrative costs. So Raleigh now underwrites the administrative costs for that foundation. And when we did that, it went from raising $30,000 or $40,000, $50,000, $60,000 a year to a couple $100,000 a year. And that's a huge difference. And we've made significant impacts. We've pledged $100,000 to one project over a 4-year period. Given $25,000 grants to different organizations, and those can really make an impact and help the people in our community that truly need it. And so that's the stuff that has always made me warm and fuzzy inside and be proud to be part of this organization.
Yeah. Well, first of all, I mean, obviously anything that involves, you know, giving back to the community is something that is near and dear, should be at least to all of us, because we're part of the community. And so I love hearing those different initiatives and how they take off and how, you know, we prioritize them in our different industries. I think, you know, Realtor Giving Network and the way it kind of goes about, not just the marketing wise of like staying in front of realtors and making sure realtors know what we're doing in order to impact the community. I think those are things that are, you can't overemphasize how important it is, you know, to keep that that opportunity in front of people. And I think it's really cool to say that we can give back at that level from an organization like this. So I think moving on, you know, as we kind of wind down our time together and as you wind down your tenure and talking about a transition, I think transitions can be so tricky if not done well. And obviously you've done a great job at planning and working with the board to figure out what the next steps look like. So what does transition look like at your stature, at this level of an organization? What does the transition look like? What does the handoff look like? How do you plan for that? And what can people expect in that process?
Sure. Well, I think we're in really good position to execute a solid onboarding process for the new person. Sometimes you come into these jobs, and I've done it, where the person wasn't, you know, there was nobody to, as a matter of fact, when I went to Charlottesville, I don't think they'd had a CEO for like 4 months or 6 months or something. So that's a problem, right?
Yeah.
And the transition was, figure it out, good luck, you know.
Yeah.
That was transition and the onboarding process. So what I've made sure happened here, because I built up a great staff and we've done lots of great things, I just didn't want to see it all just fall apart.
Yeah.
So I gave a long notice of my retirement. Not as bad as like Oprah, but you know, it's significant. And
a long goodbye.
Yeah, exactly. It wasn't to say goodbye, it was to give them a chance. I actually got in trouble because I told them I was leaving, and it was public and it wasn't secret, but I didn't really call people and say, hey, I'm retiring next, you know, and because it was like so far away, I was like, didn't seem like it. So some people got a little miffed that, why didn't you should have called me and told me. I should have heard them. I'm like, whatever, it's not that big a deal. But anyway, back to onboarding this new CEO is what's super important. There's all kinds of statistics about how a properly onboarded CEO is twice as likely to be successful as one that's poorly onboarded or not onboarded at all. And onboarding is a process of helping them understand the culture that they've fallen into, helping them understand the key players and introducing them to them and making sure there's a good positive start to their tenure, and to make sure there's not anything awful that they've had to come into. And when I was working with Rooster.com, they got a new CEO in like January of 2020, and then March of 2020, you know, COVID hits, and then people, I mean, like, what an awful start for this guy. It was a rough period. Well, we're hoping nothing like that happens, obviously, and that the new CEO has a nice, smooth sailing, where we'll put together a new strategic plan in November that they can be involved in, and that will hopefully give them some good marching orders for the next 3 years, introduce them to the right brokers and right players and other organizations and great affiliates like you. Make it they're in the knowledge of and within the culture that we're on, and knowing where the landmines are. You know, don't step on this landmine, because that could get off to a bad start. So getting off to a good start, onboarding them properly, that's key to their long term success and to RRAR's long term success.
The common thread I hear through all of this is you've had a clear vision. And I think when you have a clear vision, that helps foster a lot of trust. And pitfalls are inevitable, because we're all human and no one certainly is a robot. And that's just part of the human condition. But I think that's part of what you've built here. And that's a great legacy to hand off. And I'm looking forward to the next CEO and what they're able to accomplish and being part of that journey with them. But I wanted to end this by asking you one question. We end all of our podcasts this way. How are you lending it forward, Dave?
Yeah, so I don't really call it retiring. I call it refiring. That's the term my wife and I use, because we're you just refire your energies and your skills and talents in a different direction. And at this stage, it's refiring into stuff that brings you joy and peace and that sort of thing. Through my consulting company that I've had for years, I am going to focus on helping train leaders, association executive leaders, not realtor leaders, but association executive leaders, and possibly some. I've done lots of training with local volunteer leaders, but I'm going to be starting a leadership academy for association executives. Nationwide scope to it, a lot of virtual stuff, of course. That's what I want to do. There's a big push in the industry to have that at the national association level, and it's just not going to happen in a timely manner. So I'm going to make it happen myself and have some fun with it. I did a program in California 2 years ago now, where we took 12 people through a year-long program of leadership training. I loved that. And that's the joy that I get, is to help people become better leaders. That's where I'm headed.
I love that. I think that's a great way to lend it forward. And I think that's a great spot to wrap our conversation up. And I feel like I could talk to you for another, I don't know, several hours and just pick your brain about all these different things in our industries. But it's been a pleasure talking with you. And I'm looking forward to seeing what this next chapter looks like for you and also for RRAR. And I just wanted to say thank you so much for joining us on the Lending Forward podcast. And any parting thoughts that you want to share?
No, just thank you so much. You're a great affiliate member, and your organization is just brings so many good vibes to not only RRAR, but to the community. And we really appreciate you.
Well, thanks so much, Dave. And I appreciate you being with us. All right, everybody, join us for the next episode of Lending Forward podcast. We'll catch you on the next one.
Thanks again for tuning into today's episode of the Lending Forward podcast. Be sure to subscribe to our channel, follow us on Instagram at Lending Forward, on YouTube and LinkedIn. Tune in next week for another new episode and go lend something forward today. Atlantic Bay Mortgage Group, LLC, NMLS number 72043, NMLSconsumerAccess.org is an equal opportunity lender and employer. Located at 600 Lynn Haven Parkway, Suite 100, Virginia Beach, Virginia 23452.